This program contains adult themes and content.
Don't say we didn't warn you. Welcome, wanderers of the unseen and seekers of the strange. You've just stepped into a space between worlds, where the veil is thin, the truth is layered, and the stories are powerful. This is Stories from a Trans Witch, a journey through magic, identity, resilience, and community. I'm your host, Autumn Rose, a trans witch, storyteller, and paranormal investigator. Together, we'll explore lived experiences, current events, spirituality, discrimination, and the ways that we lift each other up when times get hard. Each episode, I invite you into my circle to hear tales from the margins, part truth, part spell, but always raw and real. So light your candles, pour your tea, breathe deep. You're listening to Stories from a Trans Witch, and now it's time to put on the hat.
I am not a stranger to the dark. Hide away, they say, 'cause we don't want your broken parts. I've learned to be ashamed of all my scars. Run away, they say, no one will love you as you are. But I won't let them break me down to dust. I know that there's a place for us, for we are glorious.
Well, good evening, everybody, and welcome to another episode of Stories from a Trans Witch on KXRW 99.9 Vancouver. We are reaching out to different queer and trans organizations in the upcoming months and just kind of highlighting the trans experience and our narrative and our stories in our culture. I am here with...
My name's Elle Stanger.
Awesome. And what are your pronouns?
They and she.
And?
Serena Blessed. And my pronouns are she, her.
We're here today and y'all are involved in an organization in Portland. Let me see if I can get this right. It's Safe Workers Coalition, correct?
Oh,
very close. So we are Oregon Safer Workers Coalition, formerly known as Oregon Sex Workers Committee.
Uh-oh, a little bit of spicy content tonight, folks. So tell me about the background of this. Like, how did you get involved in the organization? What were your motivations?
Well, the year was 1805, folks. And no, I'm just kidding.
The show is called Stories from a Trans Witch.
So I'll start because I was here slightly before Serena. Yes. So Oregon Safer Workers Coalition is a 501c3 nonprofit, which is completely run by and for current and former sex workers.
Amazing. And, you know, for those of y'all that are not maybe in the trans community, but are allies for our community, unfortunately, this tends to be a necessary situation that we face. I mean, do you want to talk about y'all's or some of y'all's experiences?
Well, I can speak on mine. For me, I am the only one who I believe is not currently an SW, I believe. And that is because I didn't particularly enjoy the work. I had to do the work when I was younger, just basically to save my skin, to save my hide. That is not abnormal, not only in the trans community, but I would say in the queer community as a whole, as a collective. As, you know, as a Black person in general, you see it a lot with, of course, you know, the Black community and the Latino community, where, you know, we don't have options and we don't have the same options as other people. And so, you know, for me, I had to do it when I was, you know, really too young to be doing it. And that's so for me, I'm not currently an SW and have not been for a long time. But that does not mean I do not care deeply about those who are. So.
And you know a lot.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know a lot. You know a lot and more than some of us who are still in the work.
Yeah.
So, and what's interesting is this organization years ago was actually founded. So OSWC was founded in 2021 by a client at the time, a local sponsor named Aaron Boonshoft. You can look all this up. He hired lobbyists and then they sourced local and faraway sex workers who wanted to give steering and feedback on a proposed bill that he was sponsoring to decriminalize prostitution. So some of us all got together because we wanted to see what the heck this client sponsor wanted to do. And when we started giving feedback on the bill and finding problems with it, we thought, well, why don't we just build an organization that suits us better? And so the lobbyist and the sponsor kind of dropped off, and we're just all self-run now.
And may I just say that we've expanded a lot on our original mission. We started serving sex workers, and, you know, through Elle and through Elle kind of roping me in, et cetera, we've expanded to helping just trans people as a collective, queer people as a collective, just marginalized communities as a collective. We really kind of, even domestic violence victims, folks that are, you know, trying to escape trafficking, you do not actually have to be a sex worker to have been helped by us. But that is where it started. And then it expanded outward.
Oh, yeah. Can I clarify on that? So through our overdose prevention kits and education, I've heard from not only sex workers and their family members, but also clients who said, like, you saved my mother's life, or you saved my friend's life, because I had naloxone that I got from OSWC and I was taught how to administer it.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
And I mean, that's a amazing knowledge to have. And, you know, being most of my audience probably doesn't even know this, but, you know, I've had my time that I've had to work as well. And, you know, the experiences that we have out there, especially being, you know, queer and trans, like, we're already 4 to 5 times more likely to experience SA. And it's even more so when you're doing it for money, because when there's money involved, these people have no feelings for you. They don't care. It's all about pleasure. It kind of leads me to my next topic. What would you say, or how do you define safety for S workers that goes beyond just physical protection?
Choice. Like most demographics, I find the thing that keeps someone safe is choice. Knowing and understanding what your safety precautions are, what your backup plans are, being able to have backup plans, being able to choose where you stay and who you associate with. And at the end of the day, I think it's the same as when we're talking about the right to choose, right? It's about choice. It's about understanding and really being able to put autonomy in the hands of those who are having to face these choices, and giving them the actual choice, not the illusion of choice, but the actual choice. And what I find is the more that we give people autonomy, and this is actually not just what I found, but actually what studies have found as well. And we can, you know, we can find those and list those if y'all want. Mm-hmm. But the more people are able to choose things for themselves, the more that you find positive outcomes over and over and over and over and over. And that includes, by the way, the things that we do with kids, right? Mm-hmm. Like it's really not about getting clean. It's really not. It's about the fact that, okay, maybe this person doesn't have the space to get clean right now, et cetera, but they have the choice as to whether to do what they're doing in a safe way. And so it's about harm reduction. And a lot of people think of, when it comes to any issue, they think in a very binary black and white way, which is not something that ever gets problems solved, right? That's if we were in a diplomatic situation and we were coming to the table with Iran, which, God willing.
We will continue to talk about that on the Substack. Stay tuned.
but, you know, no one would come to the table with this idea of, oh, they have to give us this or else. That's not how diplomacy works. And people are the same, whether you're talking in a broader sense or a much more minute sense. What is true on the wider is true in the more minor, as above, so below, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And so what we're talking about here is really the fact that people need to be able to have a series of choices that are, quite frankly, on the grayscale of spectrums, because that's what actually allows you to get from one place to another. Mm-hmm. It is this binary situation. Ugh, don't even get me started.
We will talk to the binary folks. Well, folks, I hope you're enjoying this episode of Stories from a Trans Witch, and happy Pride Month for those out there that are celebrating. Hope you have a safe and happy month. We're going to take a quick break and hear from our sponsors, and we'll be right back. You're listening to Stories from a Trans Witch on KXRW 99.9, Vancouver, Washington. Gather round, listeners. Tune in to the enchanting Samantha Page Show on KXRW 99.9 FM, your magic portal to art, entertainment, news, and heartfelt commentary on the LGBTQ+ community. The Samantha Page Show, Mondays at 10 p.m., only on KXRW.fm.
KXRW programming is made possible by partners like Buckley & Associates, attorneys at law, helping injured victims seek the justice they deserve for over 40 years. Licensed in Washington State, our diverse team speaks over 7 languages, making your rights more accessible and easier to understand. Learn more at buckleylaw.net. Buckley & Associates, we speak your language.
우리는 여러분의 언어를 구사합니다.
我们说你的语言.
Nosotros hablamos tu idioma.
중 tôi nói ngôn ngữ của bạn.
You better work.
Discover our city's hidden gem, hiding right below the sidewalk. Underbar is a speakeasy-themed cocktail lounge located downtown Vancouver. As an LGBTQ-friendly and gay-owned space, it is a go-to destination for weekly events such as comedy, trivia, bingo, and open mic nights. Local artists are featured every first Friday of the month, and every fourth Sunday is Underbar's Underground Drag Brunch Show, 2 to 4 p.m. More information and location can be found at underbarvancouver.com. That's underbarvancouver.com.
A big thank you to our founding partners at Morel Inc. Print and Marketing for their ongoing support of community radio. Morel Inc. is a woman-owned, union-staffed, state-of-the-art print shop, and since 1993 has offered high-quality, creative, and innovative printing and marketing solutions. Morel Inc.'s experienced staff creates partnerships with their clients and uses the latest technologies to meet their needs. More information about which of Morel Inc.'s products, printing, and marketing strategies will best serve your next project and budget can be found at morelinc.com. That's MORELINK.
And welcome back, everybody, to Stories from a Trans Witch on KXRW 99.9 Vancouver, Washington. We are going to get back into our interview that we did with the Oregon Safer Workers Coalition. Thank you all for stopping by tonight. Hope you all are having a happy Pride, and let's get to it. You're listening to Stories from a Trans Witch here on KXRW 99.9 Vancouver, Washington, also streaming on X-Ray FM. Due to the sensitive topics of this show, viewer discretion is advised, and you've been warned. Slater. So, you know, and that leads kind of to the next topic I wanted to address. Like, obviously, you know, when you're working in this environment, your physical safety is an immediate concern. What are some of the other concerns that you are seeing in our local community?
I'd say income worries.
That's a big one.
Yeah, like, I've been stripping in this fair city of Portland for 3 to 5 shifts a week for 17 years, minus COVID, on top of doing phone sex, fetish work, like all kinds of other stuff. So, and I've been keeping my numbers in calendars for as long. So I noticed in 2022, like, oh, we're not returning to pre-COVID numbers. We're actually going down. And then the city, you know, Portland confirmed that a couple years later, where they showed that the walking tourism downtown was 40% lower than a few years. So when the strip clubs are full of workers who aren't even making like a minimum wage, you bet your ass we're going to be doing other things for work. And that might mean going to the client's hotel after, or like giving them your number so they can buy a clip or whatever. And we, a lot of us, want to make money where we're at. I don't want to have to be constantly scrambling. So people who can't make money locally, some of us have tried to go online, which then leaves a digital footprint. You're worried about surveillance, harassment, all kinds of that, banking issues. And then some people have just actually left, moved back in with their parents, or they're like, you know, I'm going to wait tables. And there's nothing wrong with that at all. But they're like, I'd rather be stripping. Like, even the choice workers can't make enough.
It's, and if I may say it from a different perspective, but also connected, in terms of the trans girls, access. Because Elle is speaking from, and respectfully, a place where, you know, you have an AFAB body. Mm-hmm. If you don't have an AFAB body, that means assigned female at birth, right? Mm-hmm. I think there's two or three clubs that have a trans night.
And I work at one of them, and they have trans dancers, a couple of them. If it's not Tuesday All Genders Night at Kit Kat, which we love, then it's like a couple weekends, you know, but that's not what, that's a couple dancers in a whole ass city.
In a whole ass
city. Right. And that's nowhere close to sustainable with the population. I think we're at 760,000 in the Portland metro.
So, and then if you're Black, if you are of color, and you're considered a specialty or a fetish at that point, then you're further marginalized. So this goes down, this is exactly what I was talking about, but then it goes down just, you know, just paint the whole picture. It just goes down and down and down and down until you're not, what numbers are you making? it just starts to look really, 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 really sparse. So yes, that would be one thing. But it's, in addition to that, I would also say that if you notice, violence has gone up against workers. That is also a huge concern. The manosphere has impacted how women, trans, cis women, every kind of, and not just women, but workers, because non-binary people are also workers frequently, and even male workers are experiencing violence, because, quite frankly, people are, I mean, we just, what was it, 64 million men were found on this grape site.
Oh, it was 62 million visits, but 62. About 1,000 men.
You're talking about the Grape Academy.
Yeah, the Grape Academy.
I'm working on an article on that right now.
Yes, and sorry, what were the numbers on?
So it was 62 million visits in a month to that particular website, and I think about 1,000 specific users in a group. But those numbers honestly aren't reflective of a whole lot, because visits are not the same as individuals, but you also don't know how many people might have visited if they knew the site existed.
Well, and then it gets into the whole situation of, okay, so here's my thing. Okay. So you've got 64 million visits or whatever. Mm-hmm. Why was no one ringing the bell here?
Yeah. How long did it take for people to be like, what the hell is this?
What the hell is this? Because I could get into the idea of like one or two of them were like, okay, what, like, you know, going, okay, let me figure out what this is so I can go to the right authorities. But like, okay, but how many people did it take?
Mm-hmm. It did nothing.
And they did nothing. So that's being complicit is just as bad as being the person doing it.
And yeah, I mean, that kind of brings up an interesting topic, because I'm doing some work on the Epstein files right now, and there was a trans individual, and I cannot think of her name right now, but you know, she was one of the original victims of Epstein. Yeah. But because she was trans, immediately when she came out to law enforcement and to the proper authorities, they dismissed her, they marginalized her. And because of this, you know, that ring went on for how many years and affected so many people.
Well, and that's really an important part of it, right? It's like, I hear how many people talking right now about like, oh my gosh, you know, how are we to know this? How are we to know that? How about listening to Black women? How about listening to trans women? How about listening to Latino women, immigrant women? How about listening to Muslim women? How about listening to, like, you guys, at what point are we going to understand the concept of a canary in the coal mine? Like, it's not going to be your white, cis, able-bodied, thin, pretty, or at least not often. Because guess what? Actually, let me rephrase. Because they didn't believe Monica neither. Okay. So, Miss Monica, bless her heart. Love her podcast. But, like, can we be 100%? Like, it's they don't believe, they just don't want to believe women.
I mean, are you saying that S-shaming is a thing in our culture?
No, never. No, but yes, exactly. It just comes down to, and it comes down to, and it's not just on the right side either. It comes down to, I don't know if you guys have seen the interviews that Joe Biden did with, what was her name? Anita Bryant, I believe. It's devastating to watch. It's devastating to watch how he used his law degree and he used his to, like, just gang up on this woman of color and this Black woman, excuse me. And it just kind of kills me. It honestly, it just, and listen, I voted for him because I had to, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, me too.
But
lack of options.
Lack of options. Listen, harm reduction is real. But all I gotta say is, like, we have a problem in our communities. We have a problem on both sides of the aisle.
Oh, I totally agree with you. And, you know, some of my personal experiences, and this was, you know, regardless of whether I was working or, you know, for a pleasure reason, but encountering some of the hookup culture, you know, us as trans, we are so fetishized. I mean, you know, MAGA will sit there and create hundreds of laws to try to invalidate our existence and erase us, yet they want nothing more than to be in bed with us that night. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that creates its own unique challenges because, you know, what does a person do when maybe that person snaps out of it and their confusion sets in and that leads to rage and anger? You know, I don't know if y'all heard stories about that. Like, what are your feelings?
I mean, every man wants to be in my bed at night. So that makes sense. They're only human. And, well, I look like this. So there's that. So, but in addition,
I'm sitting in front of a goddess since we are on the air. So, you know, it's hard to sit in front of a goddess.
But I will say, you're correct. You are correct. I have so many MAGA boys to this day who just are just relentless in their pursuit. And it's so funny because I recently got a boyfriend, right? And he's very, 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 very left-leaning, like eat the rich left-leaning. And it's so funny watching the MAGA boys respond to, and especially because, you know, my boyfriend is 24, 25. And it was just hilarious. And watching these
MAGA. I mean, she's no more than 26, so.
I'm 40. But
I thought you were 200.
It's true. You look 268. Great. It's the
you're not on one of those vampire TikTok videos, are you?
No. It's witchcraft. It's you know. But the point is that overall, it's been really funny watching these MAG boys respond to, no, I'm no longer available.
Yeah.
Like, but I was never available to them anyway.
I have a thought.
Oh, God.
Yeah.
So, listeners are welcome to please look us up, see what we look like. I am a fab. I've leaned more, I get clocked as a dyke a lot these days, which I'm queer, so I love that for me.
And we love our dykes.
We love our dykes. Yeah, definitely. So, what I have noticed is I have also, like, I started stripping and sex working and modeling when I was 18, 19, 21, 22. I'll be 40 this year, and my vibe, like my masculine edge, has increased, which I also love. And something I experience is the men that are attracted to me, typically on webcam, strip club, they don't look like the people I would date. They're very normie, they're very conservative, they're blue collar, and often very socially conservative leaning. But they're interested in me, I think, because I don't look like their wives or girlfriends. And I call it a rage boner because sometimes I can tell they're like annoyed that they're into me and they want to interact. But, you know, like I'm also a certified sex educator and I will just say a lot of violence comes down to shame.
Yeah.
People feel shame about their arousal or what they're into because they've been told their whole lives that whatever they're into, you know, like is bad. And that means big bodied people, people of color, trans people, you know, whatever, gender queer. A lot of folks are like, oh God, I hate that I'm aroused. So I'm going to take it out on you.
Well, unfortunately, that is a horrible side effect from Western culture because, you know, we have been programmed for centuries to despise our sexuality. I mean, I can attest to that coming out of, you know, 32 years of what I would call Christian nationalism. Wow. Like, sex was only for procreation. That was it. Like, if you felt pleasure, you were wrong. And, you know, now, you know, let's talk about the people that are on that side and will never come out because of fear of losing family or, you know, a story of them being eternally, you know, cursed for who they are, which is beautiful souls that are, you know, just a normal human. But we've stigmatized that, too.
Yeah. Well, and actually, you know, what's so funny is I have a daughter who's also trans, and we compare notes, and she's very punk. She's a white girl, and I was talking to her once, and she asked me, she said, Mama, why don't you dress punk anymore? Why don't you, because, you know, and I said, I do, and she goes, what do you mean? You dress like a 1950s housewife that is, like, going to a garden party, and here's the thing. For me, as a Black woman, as a Black trans woman, as a Black Indigenous trans woman, the most punk thing I can be is the object of their desire. And it's true. I get my licks back a little bit by being the most feminine, the most like pink, frilly, like also I enjoy it. It is also a truth. But here's the thing. It is so enraging for these men to be attracted to me on a level where I am everything that their wives wish and are trying to be, but I actually do it right. And on top of it, I'm Black. And on top of it, I am, you know, trans. And that is one of the funniest. I take my licks back, just lick by lick. Just because, and I guess that's petty.
Oh, no. We have a lot of fun in the Costco. We go shopping and she gets all the compliments.
That's amazing. And I can totally appreciate this. And if my sister's listening to this, I will talk to you after the show because I know this is going to start an argument. But I used to get the same thing because, you know, I was a simple country girl. I grew up in a town of under 10,000 when I was in my teens. Like, I worked a farm. I knew how to ride a horse, you know. It was always jeans and a t-shirt. That was the culture, and that was how you were accepted in a feminine role. And this was before I even came out. So when I initially came out, and I came out back in 2017, 2018, my sister used to pick on me because she's like, you look like an 80-year-old woman, girl. Because I wanted to show skin. It was, you know, my skin was covered. I was very conservative in my dress. And, you know, my experience coming to Portland, like, that was culture shock. You know, Southern girl here in the big city or the West Coast, you know, it started helping me decompress my life and embrace my femininity. And that high that you're talking about, I am the same way. If you ever see me go into a club, I will probably be wearing a short black dress. I will have the fishnets on and I have a cute pair of wedges. And let me tell you, I will turn every head in that bar or that club. But again, this is something that, you know, society just does not want to embrace. I mean, Samantha Lux, amazing content creator online. I've followed her since I came out. She was talking about the trans experience with the Epstein files. And to as much as it's a hard read for people that want to educate themselves, I highly recommend reading that because it shows how a cis white heterosexual male is processing being with someone like us. And yeah, it's eye-opening.
It's fascinating. So where are we on the questions, my love?
We're sorry, we got a little sidetracked.
We can always, I was like, am I misreading? No.
Well, we can always, if it doesn't fit into the hour, we can always put that on socials too, a little more freedom there. Okay. I wanted to go on with, so what are some of the gaps in like legal protections here in the PNW?
This would be for you, honey.
Oh, yeah. So let's see, gaps in the existing legal protections. Let's say healthcare and medical, child custody and parenting, food and housing, transportation, workers in general, like whether or not they're parents, but just workers in general are typically afraid to seek care in many circumstances after an assault because it leads to scrutiny or criticism or harassment, and they may become endangered for seeking services.
And we're just going to leave that one right there.
Yeah.
So obviously, you know, we're dealing with some challenges with our current legislation, the current administration that's in the office. What are some of the victories that you've seen in your work? And also, you know, what are your takeaways from being involved in that community support?
Well, I can talk about it from a grassroots level. Mm-hmm. First off, the first thing I would say is our trans care is very grassroots, very, very, very grassroots. It comes from everything from providing, you know, everything from deodorant to shampoo and, you know, makeup and perfume to, you know,
clothing,
shoes,
wigs. You do all this.
Yeah.
She does too much. She can't remember it all.
Yeah, I truly can't. Just a comprehensive understanding of what it is to be a trans woman. And I hate to say it, but as a woman, the respect you are given is directly correlated by how attractive you are deemed. Mm-hmm. However, I will say specifically, part of what I also offer, just speaking me, what I bring to the org is not just giving out these items, but also, often instructing with, okay, how do we put these on? What is it like to put on a lash? What is a half lash? Why do we use a half lash and not a full lash? Because ain't nobody like a full lash, nobody. Ain't nobody ever done love a full lash.
And that's why I don't wear full lashes anymore.
It just doesn't work. And so one way or the other, it's always gonna poke your eye. And if you got contacts, just fuck it. So but
she can't turn it off. I'll pick her up and she's like, you could do a little peach on your cheeks.
She got you with the peach too. Okay, good to know.
Listen, it's all about color theory, y'all.
This is a plan. This is a planned strategy at this point.
It's true. So we do a lot of grassroots stuff. And I believe that if you feel good, it's often because you look good or you feel you look good. So we start there. And of course, there's other parts such as our harm reduction kits. We can, as Elle mentioned earlier, there are so many stories. And by the way, I have also saved several people myself just from having the proper tools on hand. I keep it in my purse. Several people on the train, I've actually noticed having overdoses, and I've actually been able to step in twice.
Dang.
And I didn't know these folks, but I was able to step in twice. So like, I can speak directly to how much it matters, because in one case, one girl was screaming that her partner was overdosing, and no one else. And I had it in my purse, and I was like, "All right, let's go. It's go time, baby."
That's so intense.
And so you know, it really does save lives, and grassroots organizations like ours, there is bigger legislation, which I have a feeling else about to talk about, but let me just speak from a grassroots place of in people's everyday lives, and even being able to provide where are shelters and how to navigate this, that, and the other. You know, we do make a difference, and I can speak to that very personally.
Yeah. Specifically, we didn't name some of the items, but for the last like 3 or so years, we've been giving out harm reduction kits, also very responsive to what's going on, because at first it was just to prevent fentanyl overdoses or opioid overdoses, but now xylazine's been on the street for a couple years, which doesn't respond to those. So we put in xylazine test strips. And this program, the harm reduction program, is actually it is the brainchild and the baby of our committee or our coalition member, Stoney Fay, who was in Oregon. They're in the East Coast now, but they lost a partner to addiction some years ago and so created the program.
I hope y'all are enjoying this show tonight. This is a little bit deeper of a topic that we normally have on the show, but it was something I wanted to bring attention to because it's a part of the trans identity and existence that doesn't get talked about as much on mainstream media. And, you know, this is really important because so many people are victims to the system because they have been forced into a lifestyle to make a living. And that's because of discrimination in jobs or, you know, the list goes on. But these are topics that need to be talked about in our community. We're going to take a quick break and hear from our sponsors. And we'll be right back on Stories from a Trans Witch on KXRW 99.9 Vancouver, Washington.
A big thank you to our founding partners at Morel Inc. Print and Marketing for their ongoing support of community radio. Morel Inc. is a woman-owned, union-staffed, state-of-the-art print shop, and since 1993 has offered high-quality, creative, and innovative printing and marketing solutions. Morel Inc.'s experienced staff creates partnerships with their clients and uses the latest technologies to meet their needs. More information about which of Morel Inc.'s products, printing, and marketing strategies will best serve your next project and budget can be found at morelinc.com. That's morelinc.com.
Some radio shows shine a light, while others go straight into darkness. Join Hassling the Paranormal with Jason Hassler on KXRW 99.9 FM Vancouver, where the veil between worlds is never closed. Join him in the haunted corners of KXRW every second and fourth Thursday from 6 to 7 as he leads the way chasing shadows, calling out whispers, and hassling the spirits that most people would rather leave alone. Expect stories that chill the spine, haunted history that refuses to stay buried, and encounters that prove the unknown is closer than you think. Jason's not just hunting the paranormal, he's daring to answer back. So light your candle, draw your circle, and tune in, because the night is full of questions, and Jason is here to hassle the answer. Once again, that's Hassling the Paranormal with Jason Hassler, every second and fourth Thursday from 6 to 7 on KXRW 99.9 FM Vancouver, and streaming worldwide on X-Ray FM. Some shows invite you in. This one summons you. Every third Friday from 5 to 7 p.m., Blind Country with Doug Cox lights the lanterns at the edge of the map. 2 hours of honky-tonk haunting, lonesome heart lullabies, and the kind of storytelling that turns dust to gold. Expect murder ballads with a heartbeat, highway hymns with a hex, and deep cuts that feel like they've been riding in your glove box for years. Doug is your road witch and ringmaster, stirring steel guitars and fiddles fire, and voices rough as the desert sage. Bring your boots, your broken compass, and your best singing ghost. Cross the country line, cross the veil, and come home by radio. Blind Country, every third Friday, 5 to 7, here on KXRW 99.9, Vancouver, Washington. Also streaming live anywhere in the world on xray.fm.
This program contains adult themes and content.
Don't say we didn't warn you.
Welcome back to Stories from a Trans Witch on KXRW 99.9 Vancouver, Washington. I'm your host, Autumn Rose. And before we get back to our interview with the Oregon Safer Workers Coalition, I just want to take a moment to shout out that we will be hanging out at Pride this weekend in Hillsborough. I believe that is from 11 to 5. You can get the details online. I'm going to be hanging out all day there, and I'm going to be joined by my friend Samantha Page from the Samantha Page Show. And I would love to get a chance to meet you, hang out with you, and celebrate Pride together. This year, more than ever, we need to be vocal and celebrate Pride and remember that Pride is not a party, it's a protest. And with the rights that are trying to be taken from trans individuals alone in 2026, now is more than ever a time to stand up, use our voices, and be loud. So hopefully I will see you out there. Again, that is Hillsborough Pride on Saturday from 11 to 5. And now we're going to get back into our interview with the Oregon Safer Workers Coalition.
Immediately after.
And that kind of ties into one of the other questions. Like, I know it can tend to be a little different on tracking data and stuff with the grassroots organization, but do y'all have any like actual data on the results of the efforts that you're putting into this?
We don't know feedback results, like, you know, unless, except for the people who've said specifically, like, you saved this person's life. You know, I think a lot of victories sometimes is just preventing loss or bad things from happening. I believe we've given out about 6,200 items in the last 2 years.
And, you know, this kind of presents a challenge and, you know, leads to the question, like, are there any bills in Oregon that you support currently, or have you seen any, you know, efforts from Salem to like address this situation on the streets?
So, you know, what's really, what's interesting is since the decriminalization of some drugs has not been a success, I would say because of timing and
lack of implementation, considering that they just took the funds, put them to the side and didn't implement them. So there were no in between.
Right. So because there is a great amount of people that are still struggling with addiction visibly on the streets of Portland, the public response has been very negative and blames the decriminalization of drugs. They just don't want to see it. And so, unfortunately, what I'm hearing, not directly like on record, but what I do hear privately from legislators and people who are advocates is that folks are less likely to decriminalize prostitution now than maybe they were some years ago because they think they'll just see more sex workers and they don't want to see the sex workers.
Yeah.
Just like they don't want to see the people who are addicted or unhoused.
Yeah, kind of ties into another article I'm working on right now. And, you know, that's the same story I'm hearing on the streets of Portland with the homeless crisis we're facing. Like, that's how that community is being marginalized and feels right now. And it's so true for people. And this is where I feel society really needs to educate itself. Number one, this has been a profession. And yes, I said profession for anybody that has an audience. Y'all can catch me on Facebook. But this is one of the oldest existing professions in this world. And it is something that it's time that we address. It's time that we talk about it. You know, why not have unions? Why not have benefits for these, you know, workers that are just out there trying to survive?
Yeah. Well, and it gets down into more than that because so here's the thing. Because here's the trick. So magically, let's say that we do decriminalize. Okay. It goes down to more than that. In that, okay, then we have a situation as well, because a lot of the Black community, a lot of the Brown community, it might not have access even then to practicing what is considered above board sex work. Mm-hmm. Right? It's not just in terms of sex workers that our society needs to educate itself. It's also in terms of equity. And because here's the thing is, here's what has always been my huge worry is, okay, so we decriminalize, which I'm all for, let me be very clear. Then we have a bunch of, you know, Asian spa workers and Black girls and trans girls on the street who can't afford a license, who, because they made licenses, you know. So it's goes beyond just our society needs to educate itself about sex workers. Our society has a problem with those who are on the fringe. Mm-hmm. And for all that it says that, oh, I care about this group, I care about that group, let me put a little black box in my bio or whatever the fuck. It comes down to really, really thinking ahead and really, really going ahead and taking an interest in people that you don't have to be interested in, that you don't have a requirement to be interested in, because it will get to you.
I have a thought. So New Zealand has decriminalized prostitution for like over 20 years. I think it was 2003. And we know we have sex worker contacts and friends in the small, you know, little country of New Zealand. And what I hear a common criticism is, and this, you know, look it up, but when they were arguing about whether or not to decriminalize prostitution, there were some agreements that were made, like some contingencies. And one of them was a follow-up study to see if there was any impacts. And when they did the follow-up study, they found that a lot of people who'd been working on the street were still there. And they said for the same reasons that they had before, which is like flexibility of working hours or freedom, whatever. However, when they decriminalize sex work in New Zealand, it doesn't apply to migrants or like non-citizens. Right. So that was one of the things, too, where it's like it's not an equity issue, because if you're still saying that immigrants are arrestable, it's not truly decriminalized. It just is for some people.
So let's talk about this for a minute, because we were earlier we were talking about the decriminalization of certain drugs in the Portland area. And, you know, I came at the height of that because I moved here in early 23. And, you know, what I saw as a person coming in from an outside culture was, yes, it's great, you've decriminalized this, but there was absolutely no follow-up. There is no resources, no support. And we see the same situation, whether we're talking about, you know, sex workers or the homeless. We're not giving these people the resources and the tools to get up and lift up out of that situation. And they keep stumbling.
Can I just clarify here? Because yes, this is a common misconception. I understand why you saw what you saw. It makes sense. Let me be clear. And I'm not going to get this exactly right, but I'm going to try to. This is what I saw. This is what I researched. Is there was, if I recall, I think it was $1 million, actually. It was about $1 million that they had set aside, or some huge number, right, of money that was then set aside to be, it's for intermediary funds. That means programs, resources, follow-up, all this. This was completely funded. And from what I understand, it was a lot of Republicans, I can't remember, it was the House and the Senate, who cares, that blocked and paused these resources from reaching their implementation. And then, so what happened? They're playing, and they knew what that would happen when they did that, is that people would get really upset that they were still seeing that these resources weren't going to where they needed to go. But people wouldn't know that the resources weren't going to where. All they would see is, okay, we decriminalized it. Okay, it's getting worse, because that's what's about to happen if you don't have follow-up and implementation of resources and programs, right? But they couldn't start the programs because the Republicans, I can't remember whether it was the House, the Senate, something like that, statewide, were blocking and making sure that it didn't go through for something like 2 or 3 years. And so part of what you saw was not the way that it has to go inevitably. It was planned. It was resourced. But it was planned. It was resourced. It just wasn't implemented because they were able, I can't remember what way they used or what have you, but basically they got in the way of it. And then they played Jenga with human lives.
And, you know, that is something I've witnessed now being a actual citizen and resident of Oregon, because we're literally dealing with the same situation right now. Like, I'm working on, and as I said earlier, I'm working on this story with the homeless crisis. And, you know, again, Portland was exposed with $108 million of resource money just sitting there on the table in City Hall and no action being taken with that.
Yeah. And so they're doing it again.
Yeah. Lovely. So this is where, you know, we as a community need to say enough is enough and call out our city council for what is happening. This is funding that is supposed to be used for this. Now, what is it being used for at this point? You know, that's where my questions go.
Well, and from what I understand, just going back to, you know, the drug implementation thing, it never got used.
Oh, yeah. Portland Street Response, they defunded, like they didn't get to do away with it, but Portland Street Response was specifically designed to help people who are in crisis, but a uniformed officer might make the situation worse for people who are traumatized, which is a lot of us. So yeah, I was specialist in addiction, houselessness, sex work. I actually did trainings, you know, as a certified educator for cohorts that worked at Portland Street Response. And my trainings were, these are how the current laws impact populations that might be seeking help. And this is why people might not be able to disclose how they got hurt, you know, or where they're living or what they're doing. And repeatedly, these social worker, lived experience, peer support specialists at Portland Street Response would say, wow, this is one of the most interesting presentations I've ever seen. And I didn't know so much of this. And I did these for about 2 years and then funding got cut. So even something like that.
Yeah.
Again, education and awareness, folks. So how do you see the future of sex work evolving with new technologies and changing work environments?
Ooh, that's a biggie. I mean, what we're all so worried about is, of course, AI. AI is a big thing. We're seeing, that's another factor is, excuse me, is I think part of the reason we're seeing a dip with actual sex workers is I think is because of AI and AI girlfriends and et cetera.
I can't advertise my services on the exact same social media apps where I see ads for AI companions. I am a real person who cannot put a link to here's how you pay me to chat, but I can see a freaking ad for a fake person that a developer somewhere else made.
Yeah. And on top of all of that, it gets into surveillance issues as well. And also retroactive punishment and punitive shit. I mean, it gets so jammed up in the process to the point where, to be honest, I almost think it's almost safer for the girls on the street.
You know, honestly, I talk to so many sex workers who, you know, their baby daddy or ex-husband or mom or whatever is trying to get custody of their kids and they're showing like their OnlyFans link as evidence. You know, evidence of what? Nothing, because someone being a sex worker doesn't mean they're a bad parent. But it's like workers who are literally not wanting to go online because the history and the digital footprint exists. And now you have AI and biometrics, which can just scan your face on an app and then replicate you on its own.
Oh, I mean, absolutely. I mean, if we want proof of this, just look at ICE agents wearing freaking med glasses now and tracking protesters for protesting. Yes, it's a very real thing in our culture. So for our community members that are out there, if they want to support your cause or even get involved, where do they go?
You know, it really does come down to small gestures do matter. Those $5 donations, those $10 donations, those $25 donations, you think they don't matter? Oh, honey, for $25, I can redo a whole trans girl. Okay? I can change her life. And we can help people with all kinds of things. We can get supplies for our kids. We can do so much. So there's donation. If you're not able to donate your time. Like, donate your time. We need someone helping us put together these kits. We need, I mean, what other things do people do?
That's really true. Do you have a skill you can offer, such as like consulting for taxes or advising on finding healthcare or insurance? You know, like if you know something in a trade that is valuable, I bet there's someone who doesn't know it that can't afford to pay, but would love that life skill. So reach out to us. Our website is OregonSWC.org, and we have monthly Zoom meetings for either allies or sex workers. It's the first and the second Tuesday. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, if you have goods or services you want to donate, like clothing, shoes, or money, We love that.
Also,
everybody loves money.
Also, to be real, you know, especially around Black Lives Matter, people kept asking me, what can I do? What can I do? What can I do? What you can do is so simple. You mad at mommy and daddy? Love that for you. Go ahead and get them to give OSWC a little bit of money. I can put that towards the right Black folks. I can make sure that, you know, like, we don't just help, quite frankly, just the Black community. We help the most marginalized of the marginalized of the marginalized. So, you know, if you want to talk about equity, if you want to talk about, you know, really making a difference and racialized equity and also reparations, baby, this is the place. This is what we can do. And more importantly, it doesn't just help the Black community, but it does help the Black community as a whole. And more importantly, the most marginalized even in the Black community. So let me just say that.
A couple of our largest consistent donors are self-identified white, cis, hetero-leaning men in tech who literally have told me, I don't have any kids. I make more money than I need. Please, like, can I give you some? And this is few and far between, but if you want to offset your white guilt.
Yeah. Then
there's,
you know,
a place. Yeah.
There's a place, and more importantly, we really genuinely will do something with it that matters. Like, we're not playing. We use every cent, and we take it very, 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 very seriously about how we do things.
Actually, can I say about a third of our small working members are facing or dealing with housing insecurity, like, every single day?
Yeah.
And for those in the audience, I know, you know, sometimes there's so many organizations out there and it's hard to trust some of them. Let me tell you firsthand, just getting involved and getting to know this amazing group of people. Like, I'm seeing the work happening firsthand. They are practicing what they preach. And with that, we're almost out of time, but I want y'all to close us out with a call to action for our audience tonight.
I think the biggest thing I can say is remember that we're all connected. We are all interconnected. And what seems to only impact the fringe will impact you. And what impacts the center will inevitably impact the fringe. And the fact is, I think we have noticed more than anything, whether it is through AI, whether it is through this administration, we have noticed that we are all interconnected and what we do matters to one another. So it may just be $5. It may just be an afternoon or 2 hours, but you can make a difference. And what you see, what you say, what you think, the way you move does indeed matter. You matter. And so therefore, make it matter.
She said it all.
And there you go, folks. Thank you so much for tuning in tonight, and we will see you next time. This is Autumn Rose from Stories from a Trans Witch on KXRW 99.9 Vancouver, Washington.